This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome back, everybody, to the People Who Speak radio show. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson. The People Who Speak show normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. Or you can join us live in the government and politics section of Pal Talk, the largest free chat program in the world, where we have our virtual radio room, the People Speak radio show, that anyone may join to participate in the show. This is a fantastic show tonight. I'm more excited than a stoned greenie in a beanie eating a soybean weenie. We are talking to a very special guest right here, an Australian geologist, Professor Emeritus of Earth Science at the University of Melbourne, a Professor of Mining Geology at the University of Adelaide, and the Director of multiple mining and mineral exploration companies. We are talking tonight to Professor Ian Plimer about his two new books, Heaven and Hell, The Pope Condemns the Poor to Eternal Poverty, and Not for Greens. Welcome to the People Speak radio show, Professor Ian Plimer, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, and good afternoon to me and good evening to all those in North America.
Fantastic. We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour, but my first question to you, Professor Plimer, sir, is what are some of the reactions you've experienced since the two new books that you published?
Well, Greens don't read books. That's evidenced by their perpetual ignorance. So I've had absolutely no comment at all from those who want to put their hand out and have everyone else change their way of living without doing anything themselves. But I've had a lot of comment from people who are concerned about the issues, are concerned about the politics of entitlement, are concerned about green politics, the increasing cost of electricity as a result of green policies. And I have a faithful few thousand readers who will read and buy my books. The most recent book, Heaven and Hell, The Pope Condemns the Poor to Eternal Poverty, was in response to the papal encyclical of May last year, and this book came out in late September, early October. And that book very much capitalises on what we're seeing in the church, and the church is divided between those people who I call progressive, and they are the conservatives, and those people who represent the rural, socialist, agrarian of the church. And so there's been a little bit of dissent on that book. The German edition has just come out, and we're awaiting the Italian edition to come out.
Wow. We'll get to the book Heaven and Hell in a moment, but first of all, the book you published in 2014, Not for Greens, is a remarkable work of scientific research. Its main premise is that just to make a single stainless steel spoon, a huge amount of energy, waste, and fossil fuel is required. Why do you think it is that green politics in 2016 is about as green as an Exxon Valdez oil spill?
Well, the Greens are not concerned about knowledge. They're not concerned about information. They are concerned about politics. They have no interest whatsoever in the environment. They have no interest whatsoever in poverty. And they don't really know what they consume, and they don't want to know. And if they are to feed themselves using a stainless steel teaspoon, then they have to use commodities, which are mined. They have to use a lot of energy, and that just becomes too small a world for them. They want to have the big world where they can wave their finger at you and tell you what to do. They don't read books. They don't have knowledge. And the book wasn't written for them. It was written for the average person to give them ammunition to fire at Greens.
Well, the first thing that came to my mind when I read this book was that there are still some cultures out there, for example, some Indonesian people and Filipinos that use their hands to eat, and they still use banana leaves as plates. Is it not possible that we could go back to the green, the true greens, and actually not rely on some of the stuff that we have in modern day?
Well, they'd want you to go back to that, but they'd want to live their comfortable middle-class life in a city. They live in cities. They have never been in the bush. They've never been outdoors. They don't understand the environment. But they want you to live that sort of life while they can maintain their comfortable middle-class life. And to do that, they want to run up your costs. To do that, they want to impose restrictions on you all the time. And in effect, to be a Green is to be anti-environmental and to place restrictions on your fellow man, which in many ways are an attack on our freedoms.
One thing that really struck me as being hypocritical was Peter Garrett singing all about U.S. forces and how we should protect the environment. But when he got into politics, he completely changed. Everything he ever sung about and talked about was completely opposite.
Well, just give a Green a sniff of a few dollars and they change very quickly. Excuse my cynicism.
Well, your cynicism is well-founded. You've done a lot of research into it, and that's for sure. Now, you've been quoted as saying the global warming theory, or the AGW theory, is the biggest, most dangerous, and ruinously expensive con trick in history. How much have you seen people starting to awaken to that fact?
I think it's happening now. It's happening in Europe with the increased cost of energy. It's happening in the UK with the increased cost of energy. The US has been extraordinarily clever, as they always are, and have reduced the cost of a lot of energy because of tight oil and tight gas, and in fact reduced the reliance on places like Saudi Arabia for the energy. I've always argued it was never the science that was going to win this argument. It was always the hip pocket, and energy now is becoming very expensive. With expensive energy, you can't have employment. Once you've lost employment, then people have even higher expenses. So there is a significant change in the Western world, and I see this is what's happening, that the Green Movement is in effect attacking Western civilization, attacking the 2,500-year path we've had to be unashamedly wealthy, to have democratic systems that work, and to live in safety and security. That's what they're attacking.
So your contention, essentially, is that this is just another excuse to make another tax to keep people in poverty.
Yes, with the addition that it is also a mechanism of transferring power to those who are unelected. It is a mechanism of failed socialist ideologies to actually get some success. We know that Marxism failed in countries like Cuba and the Soviet Union and to an extent China and definitely in North Korea. But we have filled a lot of institutions, especially in Europe, especially in the Anglosphere, we filled those institutions with Marxists who actually are driving political policy. They are unelected. So that, to me, is the great danger. The whole Green Movement and the AGW, the human-induced global warming, is driven by those who are not elected. And these people are forcing policies onto people who have got more sense.
Right now in New York City, as we speak, we are seeing record snowfalls and snow blizzards actually bringing New York to a standstill. And they're trying to say this as, well, that's the cause of global warming. Do you see that as even possible?
Well, that shows that you're terribly desperate to argue that massive snowfalls of 3 feet or so are a result of global warming. What it is telling you is that people have forgotten history. And if you don't understand history, you will never understand who you are and where you're going. Now, in former times, we would call a very hot summer a hot summer. Now it's apparently global warming. In former times, we would call a cold winter a cold winter. Now it's global warming. So whether you trip on a step or spill your drink or have a foot of snow, it's all due to human activity. It's all due to global warming. And it's so easy. I don't know why you can't see it.
Now, a lot of people will say that, global warming is happening because of human introduction into the atmosphere. But reading your book, Heaven and Earth, a few years ago, it is very clear that these things are just cycles that happen all the time. We are continuously going through these cycles. Could you expand on that at all?
Yes. Well, the first point is that climate has left a record, and we geologists can read the rocks. And we have a climate record and a climate cycle going back a long time. It goes back only 4,000 million years. We have cycles, and one cycle is every 143 million years, and that's where we're in a bad address in the galaxy. And that's when we have massive ice ages. Then we have other cycles of about 100,000, 40,000 and 20,000, and they are due to changes in the Earth's orbit. And if we are in one of those big ice ages, then that dictates whether we go into a glaciation when the ice sheets expand or an interglacial when they contract. Our other cycles are driven by the sun, and for some odd reason that great ball of heat in the sky appears to drive climate, and the solar cycles are every 1500, 217, 87 and 22 years, and that is well recorded in the past. We also have ocean cycles. Every 60 years or so we get changes. We have lunar tidal cycles that push warm water into the Arctic. We have cycles that may well be gravitationally driven. So when we look back in time, we can see that there are cycles of climate. If we look back just the last 10,000 years, we are living in quite cool times. For people to claim that we've had the hottest year ever, it's just absolute codswallop. We have had about 8,000 years when it's been much, much hotter than now. So if you ignore history, you can come up with any preposterous piffle. And this is what comes up. Preposterous piffle.
You know, it's interesting. Every year that I read the headlines, every time there's a new year, they make the announcement that last year was the hottest year on record. They seem to do this every single year. Do you think that's just trying to drive the message home to an ignorant public?
Oh, very much so, but the public's not stupid. They know what goes on. What happens is that the land and sea temperature measurements are adjusted. And if you adjust measurements of many years ago down and you adjust today's measurements up, then you can show that temperature is rising and we are having the hottest years ever. Now, there's one great problem with that. The two data sets for satellite measurement of temperature show that that's not the case. They actually show that temperature really hasn't changed for about 20 years. Yet the models are saying that temperature, and these are 102 models, are saying that temperature is going to increase extraordinarily. So what has been done is that the primary data has been changed to fit the model. That is fraud.
Is it not possible that the weather is actually changing, but it's not changing because of anything human beings have done?
Well, very much so. The weather always changes, and weather over 30 years you then start to call climate. Just because we've got one hot year doesn't mean we've got a climate change. The weather always changes. If you move from, say, Helsinki to Florida, then you have a temperature change of about 30 degrees Celsius upwards. You do not die from that temperature change. So the planet has variable temperatures. Temperatures always change. We have the opposite in the southern hemisphere to you in the northern hemisphere. This is quite normal. What is now regarded as human-induced climate change, any scientist will say, well, that's just normal variability. Climates vary, temperatures vary, sea levels go up and down like a yo-yo. That's quite normal. What is abnormal is to have scientists change data. What is abnormal is for scientists to ignore a great body of other data. And what is abnormal is to have people change the data.
Now, I do believe that the Greenland ice sheet is also melting. Do you believe this is part of the normal cycle that we're experiencing at the moment?
Well, the Greenland ice sheet has waxed and waned. It has been bigger, it has been smaller. The Greenland ice sheet actually sits in a basin, as does the ice sheet in Antarctica. To make that ice move, it's not from melting, it's from pressure, because the ice then flows uphill, and when it gets to the lip of the basin, then it flows downhill to the sea. That may be partially temperature controlled, but it's actually controlled by pressure. So the Greenland ice sheet has been appearing and disappearing. It's only been with us a few million years. Antarctica's been with us for about 34 million years. These ice sheets come and go, and for most of geological time, we haven't had ice sheets. Ice is quite a rare rock. Most of the time on planet Earth, it's been warmer and wetter, and most of the time on planet Earth, we've had much better vegetation growing because we've had natural fertilization in carbon dioxide in the air.
You know, back in the 70s, they tried to tell us that we were going through the global cooling, that we're going to have another ice age. And that didn't work out, so they've now turned the tables and saying that, oh, no, we're actually going to have a melting of all this stuff. If we believe the garbage that has come out in the last 15, 20 years, wouldn't the waters be lapping at the very cities and the houses on the beaches themselves right now?
Well, of course, you've used the word believe, which is a word of religion and politics. It's not a word of science. And your great and wonderful Al Gore suggested that sea level was going to rise 20 feet at the same time he bought a waterside property. So you have to really wonder. The same people who were telling us we're going to freeze are the same people who are telling us we're going to fry and die. There's more money in frying and dying than freezing. It depends upon time. If you look back in time, 10, 20,000 years, of course we will go into another glaciation. We know it's going to be at 5 past on a Tuesday, but we just can't tell you any more than that. So this is telling us that planet Earth is dynamic. It's always been dynamic. And these people are wanting us to believe that the planet was perfectly static and nothing happened until we dreadful, sinful humans came onto planet Earth. Well, we've had life on Earth for a long time. And if we look at the influence of humans on the Earth, we've only been here on a 24-hour clock. We've only been here for the last 2 seconds. The rest of time, we humans weren't here. And you have to tell me that that very small amount of time that we humans have been on Earth is changing major complex systems which we don't understand.
Wow, you mentioned it's going to happen at 5 past on a Tuesday. I'm going to put that in my calendar and make sure I make a note of that.
Yes.
You know, one thing these people talk about, and even Al Gore, when he talks about the changing climate and the global warming, all these global warming alarmists, and that's exactly what I call them, that they never, ever seem to talk about the sun's influence on planet Earth. And you're very big on that particular field of research, I believe.
Well, the sun is a remarkable star. We have what is called a solar constant, but not all of the energy coming out of the sun is constant. We get a variability of different spectrums of energy, and we know that. The Earth's magnetic field and the sun's magnetic field provide shields to energy coming from deep space. This is the cosmic radiation that we get from a supernova collapse. So we have cycles of solar activity hitting the Earth. We can measure these at present with our sunspot cycles. We can measure them in the past with the chemical fingerprint that the radiation from the sun leaves in soils and in rocks. And we can see and correlate very clearly cold periods of time with a lack of solar activity and a cloudy Earth and more cosmic radiation hitting the Earth. And we can correlate the warm times with an active sun. Now, for Al Gore and others, it must come as a terrible shock to be able to walk outside into the sunlight and realize that it's the sun that warms the planet. It's not legislation, it's the sun. And the sun has always driven life on Earth. And one of the reasons we have life on Earth is that the sun has been relatively stable for a very long period of time. And during that period of relative stability, we've had liquid water as well as vapor water and solid water. But we've had liquid water on Earth for a very long period of time. And it's that liquid water that holds the energy from the sun. It's not the atmosphere. So if really, you really want to understand climate, you've got to look at the sun and you've got to look at the oceans. Forget the atmosphere.
You mentioned cosmic and galactic radiation. Do you believe that these are an influencing factor in our weather as well? That they influence certain portions or certain cycles within our local weather patterns on Earth?
I can't answer that question. We do know that it does affect climate over a longer period of time. And what happens is when we start to bombard the Earth with cosmic radiation, we get collisions in the atmosphere and we precipitate out water vapor into droplets of water to form clouds. These clouds reflect sunlight, reflect heat, and the planet cools down. So there's a very strong correlation between the cycles of cosmic radiation which we get and the climate. Whether we're down to less than 30 year cycles or not, in other words, the weather, I don't know yet. These are things that we can't control by legislation. We can't send a bill into outer space and say, look, I'm sorry, but it's now illegal to have cosmic radiation come to Earth. We can't send a bill from the our parliamentarians to the sun and say, well, I'm sorry, but you have to be constant. You can't vary. So there's a lot of things we don't know, but what we do know is that there's a fundamental question that's never been answered. And the question is a very simple one. please, sir, can you show me that the human emissions of carbon dioxide drive global warming? Now, that question's never been answered, but let's assume that I'm wrong, perish the thought, and that you can show me. Then I ask you the supplementary question, and that is, the IPCC tells us that 97% of carbon dioxide emissions are natural. So please, sir, show me that the 97% of carbon dioxide emissions from natural causes don't drive global warming. It's checkmate before the game starts.
We saw just recently in Paris that they had a major climate conference. Do you think a lot of this global warming and all these conferences are just an excuse to flit around the planet and spend beautiful holidays in France in big hotels?
Well, in my book, Heaven and Hell, I argued that there will be a wonderful conclusion that comes out of Paris, and that is a decision about where the next jaunt is going to be. That's the only decision. And of course it is. There are hundreds of people that go to these conferences paid for by others. There were 44,000 people there, many of whom were from NGOs, many of whom were from government. Many of those who are begging on the streets for money for the environment have spent that money in hotels in Paris and drinking French wines, which, of course, when you ferment the wine, you put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So this is, in effect, a group of unelected people who want to drive global politics. And all I can say is thank God for China and India and the US and other countries regarded as recalcitrants who are saying, no, our principal concern is our economy. And we recognise that in the past we've had very high carbon dioxide contents of the atmosphere. And what did that do? That led to a thriving of the ecosystems.
And I believe NASA recently published a photograph from space showing that there are actually more vegetation growing on Earth because of the CO2. Is that not correct?
Yes, that's correct. And those images from NASA are especially evident in North Africa, where there has been concern about the deserts moving and inundating areas of farming and population. And these photographs are showing that the reverse is happening. The photographs are also showing that in forests, we are getting them expand in most parts of the world, especially in Russia. And they're also showing one horrible, frightening thought, and that is that a lot of the carbon dioxide emissions are not coming from industry. They're coming from agriculture in Asia.
One thing that they very rarely ever mention, I've never heard it mentioned, but the emissions that come from cars, it's not carbon dioxide, it's carbon monoxide. It's a different gas altogether. Is that not true?
That's partially correct. There is some carbon dioxide. The carbon monoxide that comes from cars actually oxidizes the carbon dioxide. But that's not the story. The story is to stop you driving your car. The story is to have you completely and absolutely dependent upon these NGOs and unappointed people who finger wag at you. That's what the story is about. The motor car has liberated people, as the steam train did before. If you didn't have a car, the economy would collapse.
I do remember a couple of years ago, the conference in Copenhagen for global warming was actually snowed out. Do you remember that at all?
I was there, and these people were dressed in polar bear suits holding up signs saying, stop global warming. It was one of the best comedy shows you could ever see. It was fabulous, and they were shivering.
Yeah, but global warming, yeah, it's got some pretty strange effects. You know, a few years ago, I had the awesome opportunity to interview personally about one of your best-selling books called Heaven and Earth. That book really, really blew me away. The amount of research and the amount of references in it was incredible. Your new books that you're writing now, they're taking aim at the upper levels of hypocrisy within both the Greens movement and the pseudo-religious hypocrisy of the largest corporation in the world, which is the Vatican. It seems to me that you're certainly not afraid to take on the big players that are scamming the people of Earth.
Well, I don't have a problem with speaking the truth. And the beauty of speaking the truth is you never have to remember what you said. If you tell lies, you've got to have a very good memory. And I think it's very much my job as a scientist to call it as it is. And if people don't like it, well, it's bad luck. I underpin my opinions with evidence. If I get new evidence that forces me to change my opinion, I will. Now, I've had to do that in my scientific career a number of times. I'm happy to do it again. But the more I look at the evidence, the more I see that it's concocted. And the more I see that there are people in upper levels, such as in the Vatican, such as in politics, who are only interested in their own power. And the whole game of global warming is a wonderful mechanism to take power from the average person and to put it elsewhere. So I'm not afraid of anything. Oh, I am. I've got a daughter. Yes.
When I see the Pope talking about wealth and greed, as he did, and as you pointed out in Heaven and Hell, he talks about wealth and greed and how we should go past that and start to be humane to others. And yet the Vatican Bank itself owns as much wealth as the Rockefellers and the Queen combined. It shows me that these clowns are either out of touch with reality, they're either bold-faced liars, or they're actually pressing an agenda. Do you consider it might be a combination of all three?
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, the Pope is an agrarian socialist who's come from Argentina. He has seen some appalling poverty in Argentina. He has seen the worst of capitalism. And this you get in evolving capitalist countries, where capitalism has a very, very ugly face. However, he's also very much aware of the wealth that the church has, and he's also very well plugged into politics. Why do most countries have an embassy at the Vatican? It's a political organisation just as much as it is a religious organisation, but it's underpinned by massive wealth. Now, we don't any longer have the system of a tithe, where you give 10% of your income to the church, and as it used to be in England, a ninth of your wealth when you died went to the church. But they have accumulated wealth over a very, very long period of time. And when the church talks about poverty, I just roll my eyes. I'd much prefer to see the church say, well, how can we solve this poverty, maybe in Africa? We could build a hydroelectric dam to generate electricity and get water for farming. We could perhaps put in coal-fired power stations, the cheapest way of producing electricity, and that would bring people out of poverty. But I'm too old now to listen to people flapping their lips at me, telling me what should be done. I'd much prefer to see people do it and achieve success.
Your book, Heaven and Hell, is a hard-hitting piece, and like all your books, it's backed up by scientific data and hard-hitting research. Do you think this is why your critics are foaming at the mouth when they talk about your books, because you use too much science to make your case so precisely?
I kill an ant with a sledgehammer. I go in very hard because the other side only have to use ideology. I actually have to use information. And so I have to use a lot of science. They do not attack me on my science. They attack me because I'm ugly. Well, I know that. I look in the mirror every day and I know how dreadfully ugly I am. They attack the person, but they don't attack my science. And when they start attacking my science, then I will understand that they have some substance to their ideology. They don't. Therefore, the conclusion is very simple. It is a political ideology. It has nothing to do with science.
You know, it's very relevant that Arthur Schopenhauer was once quoted as saying, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is mocked and attacked. And finally, it's accepted as being self-evident. I see clearly this pattern in all your detractors from all your books. I see the childish name-calling and attempts to smear your work and the desperate attempts to reduce them to just your own theories. Do you feel that they are freaking out about how much impact your work is actually having on the way people are viewing these global issues today in 2016?
Yes, very much so. I don't have an organization backing me on this. I am an individual. I've spent my life in science. I'm very much interested in the scientific method and the truth. And most of the mainstream media ignore me. But for one person, I punch well above my weight. I've had a massive influence. And that is because my audience are people who have got common sense, and they get sick of hearing the propaganda from people saying the world's going to end, the chicken little arguments, and they look for information elsewhere. So I certainly have had an influence far greater than I should have had, and that is because I think the other side have overplayed their cards. I think they've been absolutely ridiculous. Rather than saying, folks, we should be preparing for a climate disaster. It could be cooling. It could be warming. We should be preparing for it. Rather than that, they're trying to control the world. And I think the average person is treated as an absolute fool, and they're not. The average person has life experiences from which they can come to sensible conclusions, and they can use something that's absolutely rare in society, and that's called common sense. So that's why my books have been very successful. I've appealed to common sense from the average person.
Please stick with us, Professor Plimer. This is the People Who Speak radio show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, talking with special guest, Professor Ian Plimer, live on internet radio across the planet. And we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
You're listening to the People Speak radio show on the BBS Radio Network, coming to you live across America and across the world in real time. And we're back with our guest tonight. He's a political analyst, a prolific author, and commentator on the scams that are shaping the globalist agenda to enslave the minds of the people. Gosh, that sounds terrible. Welcome back there, Professor Plimer, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
We have a question from Mr. Earthplay in New Mexico, who says that isn't living green is a lifestyle? It should not be a political action?
We all live green. We're all concerned about the environment. We're all concerned about the planet that we leave to our children and grandchildren. Ever since I've been a child, we've been recycling. Ever since I've been a child, I've been turning off a light switch when I walk out of a room. Ever since I'm a child, I've been looking at costs. So I think we are all Greens, but not the political Greens, not the Greens who want to tell other people how to live their world and how to live their life. So in my life, I've always been an environmentalist. I can't see any reason to change.
Right, right. We have a question from Love is Light in California. What about the methane that is happening off the coast of California? Have you heard much about that, the massive ejections from the Earth's mantle that's happening right now?
Well, that's a very astute question. Methane is a gas composed of carbon and hydrogen. It's about 23 times more effective in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. Methane is emitted from decomposing vegetation. There is a huge amount of methane that is stored as methane hydrate in sediments on the continental shelf. There's also methane that leaks out of gas fields and oil fields, and it used to leak out of pipelines in the Soviet Union, but now they've got a bottom line, they've fixed those leaks. Methane is a very significant gas leaking out of rocks. I've been underground. I was underground this morning at Broken Hill in western New South Wales in Australia, and you can hear in the drill holes the methane hissing out of the hole. Methane is a end product of bacteria chewing up coal, so you get a lot of methane in sediments. Methane is everywhere. The great thing about methane is that it tells us that there's life on Earth. Methane quite often bubbles up from the ocean floor into the seas, and in fact this is the myth that we hear at many places in the North Sea and in areas around the Bahamas, where all of a sudden ships disappear. Well, they do. If there's a swarm of methane bubbles into the ocean, then the ship can't stay afloat and they drop straight to the floor of the ocean. This has happened before. It will happen again. And methane coming out of the ocean is a very, very common phenomenon.
Wow. I do believe it negates the buoyancy of any boat that's sitting on the water, yes?
That's exactly right. Yes, the Bermuda Triangle myth. And like with all myths, there's an element of truth to it. We've seen in the North Sea where trawlers have just suddenly gone down and they haven't been knocked around in the storm. Suddenly they haven't got buoyancy and they end up upright on the floor of the sea.
We have a question from Winston Smith from Hawaii. Professor Plimer, are you aware of the report from Iron Mountain and their suggestion that an exaggerated catastrophic environmental event would be advantageous for social control?
Well, that catastrophist view pervades much of green thinking, and that is that we humans are not part of nature, which of course we are, and if we can possibly wipe out humans, then that will be great for the planet. Well, it would be. We would be where we've lived on the planet. We'd just be filled in by some other organism. And my question always to those people who say, well, haven't we got too many people? Shouldn't we massively reduce population? I just put a simple question to them. What is your preferred method of genocide? Because that's a solution to the problem.
Goodness. And I do believe it was John Lennon who said in a famous quote in 1968, we don't have an overpopulation problem. We have a distribution of resource problem. Is that not correct?
Well, that's quite correct. Not every country has got the same physical, mineral, agricultural and intellectual resources. There are some countries that are backward in all of those. And these are political borders. There's not much we can do about that. And that's why the key to having a successful society is to have a lot of free trade. And if your country is not rich in one commodity by trade, you can actually acquire that commodity. And our Greens, unfortunately, don't put that connection together. So they are against free trade as well.
We have a question from Earthplay in New Mexico again. Is it not true that the nuclear industry has done more long-term damage to our planet than all the cars on Earth?
The nuclear industry has had a couple of mishaps. The greatest mishap was that in the Soviet Union in Russia, and that was due to very backward, antiquated, poorly maintained equipment. The nuclear industry also produces a waste which can be recycled in other sorts of reactors. I would have thought that the nuclear industry comes out fairly clean in terms of damaging the planet, and I'd need to do a bit more work and have a look at some figures on that. I guess the industry that's probably done the greatest damage to the planet, the average individual's building a house. When you look at the area of land and the commodities needed for a city, it is astronomical.
We have a question from Arabella 777 in Ohio, who asks, I'm willing to accept that solar cycles are causing warming and cooling trends, but there needs to be some facts established at some point. It's either getting hotter or is it not? Why is it so hard to pin down whether or not the planet is actually getting hotter?
It's all about time, that wonderful four-letter word. So if we look in the last 20 years, the planet hasn't been getting warmer. If we look in the last 350 years, the planet has been getting warmer because we've come out of the little ice age. If we look in the last 5,000 years, we have been cooling because we've come out of the Holocene optimum. If we look at the last 10,000 years, we have been warming because we've come out of a glaciation. So it depends upon where you start that measurement as to whether you want to see the temperature rise or the temperature fall, and that provides a wonderful opportunity for fraud. I prefer to look at it a different way. I prefer to start when the Earth formed and look at what temperature's done since then. And it has risen, and it has fallen, and it's risen and stayed static, risen, fallen, and been static ever since the beginning of time. Since we started to use thermometers around about 1850, we've had a period of warming up until about 1890, then a period of cooling, then a period of warming, then a period of cooling, then a period of warming. So we've got microcycles within macrocycles. And if we look at the rate of warming in those last three temperature recorded warmings, the rate of warming is the same. That's telling us that nothing extraordinary is happening. So that Arabella's question is a very good one. And when you hear that it's the hottest year ever, you have to ask the next question. When did you start making these measurements? How did you measure it? Who measured it? What adjustments have been made? So I'm very happy to live on a dynamic planet. I'm not concerned with slight temperature rises or falls. I've only got to go outside, and the temperature inside is about 28 Celsius. Outside, it's 40. Those of you in New York, you go outside and the temperature will decrease. We can live with that. What concerns me is people think that a temperature rise is permanent or a temperature fall is permanent. It isn't. We are fortunate we live in a dynamic planet. So, Arabella, the answer to that is pick your time when you want to measure and you can get the answer you want.
Do you think a lot of people are misled or sent down the garden path, so to speak, because of things like the Michael Mann hockey stick, which was the graph that showed, oh my God, we're warming, we're all going to die. Do you think people are misled because of things like that?
Yes, very much so, and that misleading is now endemic in the whole of the climate industry, which it is. Yet farmers will say, well, no, our temperature records don't show that. People who are a little bit older say, well, no, I can remember much hotter or much colder times. And that is a sensationalism which is there to generate research monies. It's not a sensationalism for the betterment of man.
Wow. We have a question from Mike in California that asks, on a 60 Minutes chat in 2006, Professor Plimer stated that, and I quote, volcanoes that leak out carbon dioxide have caused global warming in the past. This statement starkly contrasts with his later claims that CO2 have no effect on climate. What's your response to that?
Again, the word time. There was a period of time when we had the splitting of the Atlantic Ocean, when we had huge amounts of carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere. We did have an increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide. We had a slight increase in temperature. We also, as a response, had a booming of vegetation. So on that time scale, yes. On the time scale of, say, the last 20, 30, 100 years, no. But the interesting thing with our volcanoes is that there are about 1,800 terrestrial volcanoes, and we measure what's released from most of them. We have some 3.5 million submarine volcanoes, and they release carbon dioxide into the water. That water's saline, it's high pressure, it's cool, and of course carbon dioxide dissolves readily in that. And that then, because of the oceanic conveyor belts of currents, might later appear in the atmosphere thousands of years later. We've recently found pools of liquid carbon dioxide in the ocean floor. There's one point in the Kermadec arc where liquid carbon dioxide is bubbling up through liquid sulfur. We don't know much about volcanoes. But what we do see is when we look back in time that there is no correlation between carbon dioxide and temperature. And without correlation, then there's no causation. We have the odd spike with dust going to the atmosphere from a volcano that will cool the planet for a short time. And we have the odd spike when carbon dioxide or massive releases of methane have again slightly changed temperature for a short period of time. So again, like Mike's question can be answered by saying, look at time. And that's why we geologists are the worst enemies of those people who try to drive predictions using computers.
Yes, because you actually do have access to the archives and the records that show the climate change and the climates in the past. Is that not right?
We use evidence. What a tragedy. We use evidence rather than sitting in an air-conditioned room and creating the worst-case scenario. Yeah, it's tragic, isn't it, evidence?
Yeah, well, it's certainly dashing a lot of people's hopes to get more money in the future. Now, what specific research have you done in the past that has made you really stop and say, whoa, this is huge?
My interest in the global warming movement was based on the scientific method. Science is married to evidence, and that evidence you get from measurement, from experiment, and from observation. And you get enough measurements or experiments or observations to say, wow, we've got something here. And then we try to explain it, and that is a theory. Now, that theory has to be in accord with everything else that's done in related sciences, that is a coherence criterion of science. And you come up and say, well, look, I think I can explain this natural phenomenon by this theory. If you get more evidence that's contrary to that theory, and that evidence, of course, is validated, then you have to abandon the theory. And that is where I struck difficulty with the global warming movement, that there is a huge body of evidence, and it's mainly in my science, geology, that shows that the argument that human emissions of carbon dioxide drive global warming is not substantiated by evidence. And if it's not substantiated by evidence, it's not science, and the theory should be rejected. The theory hasn't been rejected, and it keeps getting shriller and shriller, which is always the warning signs that people know they're wrong. So my objection to the global warming theory is that it's not in accord with evidence.
Right, right. We have a question from Frank in St. Louis. What do you know about Elon Musk, and what do you think his intentions are? Are they sincere when it comes to getting us off polluting influences of fossil fuels?
Look, I don't know the person that Frank refers to, so I really can't comment on that, except that just when we thought the fossil fuels was dead, then tight gas has been found, and that's now a booming industry. If that starts to die, then we still have the methane hydrates in the oceans. We have a long, long way to go with fossil fuels, which provide about 84% of the total energy in the world. We will undoubtedly get onto different sources of energy. As long as they're cheap, we will move to them. And it's always driven by the bottom line. So we've seen that ideas on peak oil have failed. We've seen ideas on peak copper and peak gas have also failed. I think the market is by far the best judge of this. And once energy becomes too expensive, the market uses another form of energy.
There is some suggestion out there on the internet, on some websites, that says that oil itself is not actually an organic substance that was made by dinosaurs and all these rotting vegetations, that it's actually produced from the mantle in the earth. How much of that have you heard, or can you comment on?
Well, the internet's full of interesting ideas. The internet's also the home of people who are somewhat dysfunctional. However, we do have oil that is in rocks and formed well before we had dinosaurs on Earth. That argument doesn't is not in accord with the evidence. However, the second part of the question was whether we have methane and other hydrocarbons from inorganic sources such as the mantle of the Earth. That's quite right. We get a leakage of methane from the mantle. It's happening all the time. Methane is one of the hydrocarbons. We do get slightly higher hydrocarbons in some mantle rocks in inclusions. It doesn't explain the chemical fingerprints that we get in oil, which are suggesting algal sources. It doesn't explain the occurrence of oil in geological sites. However, there's a very small amount of hydrocarbons that may well come from the mantle, but it doesn't give us the world's oil deposits. So we kill off the idea it's got anything to do with dinosaurs. We say there's a small amount of oil that may come from the mantle. The bulk of the oil has a algal biological signature to it.
Right, right. We have a question from Mr. Big Stuff in Vancouver, Canada, who asks, do you think that methane produced from industrial farms, from all industrial livestock factories, is actually affecting planet Earth?
There's not very much methane comes from farms, from cattle, and from algal colonies, and from industrial action. Methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas. What we have seen is one of the major sources of methane in the atmosphere in the last 30 years were leaking gas pipelines in the Soviet Union. They've now been patched up, and the methane content in that part of the world of the atmosphere has gone down significantly. So industry does put out a little bit of methane into the atmosphere. It's not a significant quantity of methane. Most of the methane comes from decomposing vegetation.
I do know there's a huge amount of decomposing vegetation in the Siberian tundra that's actually escaping into the atmosphere. Do you consider that to be a problem, and that's something that we should be facing?
No. We've had methane leaks into the atmosphere ever since the beginning of time. We've had surges of methane into the atmosphere, and that may well have oxidized in the atmosphere to give us carbon dioxide, which gave us a short spike of global warming. Methane has been detected in rocks that are thousands of millions of years old, and we have a type of bacteria, methanogenic bacteria, that live off methane. So methane is just one of the normal gases of the atmosphere. We shouldn't be frightened of what a normal natural gas is.
Do you think it's possible to actually tap that resource at any stage? You know, the escaping methane that's escaping from the ice packs in Siberia?
Yes, there probably is. When the cost of energy gets to a certain point, all of these things that we know about will be considered, but there is a bottom line to it. The tundra is a big producer of methane, the same as tropical areas produce methane. There are plenty of places where we can go for terrestrial methane at present. The best methane sources are probably submarine sources where we've got methane hydrates in sediments.
In your opinion, do you believe that planet Earth is one big slave plantation?
I have no idea what you're saying there. The planet Earth is a dynamic system. All the systems interact. The geological and oceanographic and atmospheric and biological systems all interact. They all work together in cycles. But we are not a planet that is closed. We get tens of thousands of tons of material hitting the planet every year as dust and as meteorites. We are losing hydrogen and helium into space from planet Earth. So we are exchanging components, and that's also a very interesting concept in terms of life on Mars and life elsewhere. So if you want the planet to be an isolated system, yes, but it isn't.
Right, right. It's very interactive with everything around us.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, like you, like me, we interact.
Now, I sent you, in October 2015, I sent you a link where mainstream media are finally reporting that the region of space our solar system is going through has all this extra galactic material, extra comets and extra planets flying around. We're seeing some of that reported recently. Now, this is something we both discussed about 6 or 7 years ago. Why do you think it is that the news or the mainstream media takes so long to reach the conclusions that researchers have established so many years previous?
Many of these published ideas need to be laundered into a language that the average person can understand. It doesn't mean the average person is unintelligent. It's just that they don't keep up to date with the research work. They don't have the nomenclature. And every time I read something about science in the newspaper, I think, well, I referred to that in a book 10 or 15 years ago. This is just the normal lag process that we have. I also suspect that many journalists are extraordinarily lazy. They don't think for themselves, and they don't have the ability to read something and work out what's being said. And this is especially the case now with internet journalism, where people can berate me anonymously, and they've done their job, move on to the next thing. And I guess that's shown in society now, where people don't read books. They don't read nearly as many books as they did in the past.
Right. Well, that was my next question. Do you think that these media mainstream are just lazy, or are they withholding evidence because it is such info that's not cohesive to their manipulation of the science?
I think these people are so stupid that they couldn't keep a conspiracy tight and keep it together. I think they do push their own ideology, which is why they don't release certain ideas. But eventually, they are lemmings. They have to follow the rest of them. And when an idea is published elsewhere, they'll pick it up and write it themselves. I think they're lazy. I don't think they have the ability to get to a story first and get to an idea first. And they think they have great influence over the public. Well, they do for a short time, but the public is not stupid. And that's a mistake that the warmists make. They assume the public is stupid.
We have one last question from Mike in Liverpool. Do you think overpopulation is a real concern or something that is hyped up to induce fear within the population?
In 1960, we were fearing we might go to 3 billion people, and we've had an agricultural revolution, and we're now over 7 billion. And the logical part of my brain says somewhere along the line there has to be a limit to population, and I think it's very easy to limit population. People who are wealthy produce fewer children. And if we can have the environmental movement focus on getting cheap energy and cheap water and good agriculture with genetically modified crops in Africa, the population will decrease. The second part of the question, I think, is true. I think we are biologically hardwired to fear something. And a good politician will try to keep you fearful of something all the time. That's their way of making you toe the line. That's their way of controlling you. And when you can shake off those fears, then you can be a much more rational, independent, and logical thinker. That's what we've been doing for 2,500 years since the time of Aristotle, and I don't see why we should change.
And of course, your mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open.
That's quite correct.
I believe that's your quote.
It is indeed, yes.
Well, thanks very much. You've been listening to the People Speak Radio Show with special guest Professor Ian Plimer. I'd like to recommend everybody get a copy of his two new books published by Connor Court called Heaven and Hell and Not for Greens. I'd like to thank you so much for being on the show, Professor Plimer, sir.
And I thank the audience of the People Speak and those people that rang in from Canada and all parts of the U.S. And thank you, Steve, for having me.
Absolutely. We're certainly going to have to get you on again. I've still got a lot of questions to get through. Please join us coming up on the People Speak show when I talk soon with Professor James Tracy, Australian researcher PK22, and many other special guests. Stay tuned for those interviews coming soon. Big thanks go out to the producers Mike, Doug, and Donald, to all my friends throughout the world, and to all the guys who give me so much support. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You can tune into my own YouTube channel called Stop Funding Israel. But for me for now, take care and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest.